Welcome to Light in the Land, where we illuminate the Bible within the context of the land of Israel. Each week, we uniquely dive into biblical passages using archaeology, history, geography, customs and culture of the biblical period, and the Hebraic background of Jesus, guiding you along ancient paths and into biblical towns and landscapes is Dr. John DeLancey. He serves as the founder and director of Biblical Israel Ministries and Tours, and has led over 90 Israel study trips to date, as well as participated in many archaeological digs. We pray this program connects you to the land, deepens your understanding of the Bible, and inspires your walk of faith in Christ.
Shalom, hello, and welcome to Light in the Land, where we discover the Bible through the lens of Israel's physical settings. We return to the Old Testament today in a very familiar passage from 1 Samuel chapter 17 as we talk about the battles of life, using the example of the story of David and Goliath. Now, the reason why I've chosen this passage for this program is that I just returned from Israel, and our last sight of the last day was the Elah Valley, where we actually saw the battlefield where this event took place. So I am thankful that you have tuned in to join me for a trip to this location, located in the lowlands of Judah. Let's face it, no matter the sporting event, seeing an underdog beat the expected winner brings a certain joy and a sense of rightness, does it not? Perhaps we resonate with seeing the underdog win because we see ourselves as underdogs in life and can relate to the struggles of the competition. Sometimes life is simply hard. After all, we're up against many giant-sized challenges during our brief but turbulent journey here on earth. This is why I believe this story from 1 Samuel 17, which is all about trust, will, I hope, encourage us in trusting in God through all of life's challenges. After all, that is the key to conquering our worries and fears. Battle-like challenges that are difficult to conquer are a real part of our Christian life, and the bigger the challenge, the greater our natural tendency to feel like an unprepared and ill-equipped underdog. It leaves us with a sense of hopelessness and even perhaps a fear of being swallowed up by the trial or the daunting task. So as we unfold 1 Samuel 17 in the context of the Elah Valley, this chapter is all about God's underdog who displayed a trusting heart despite a seemingly hopeless encounter with a rather tall, large, and formidable foe. This is a familiar story of David, the courageous and ruddy shepherd boy from Bethlehem, and of course this guy named Goliath, an enormous Philistine giant from nearby Gath. Really, for hundreds of years, the Shephelah, or the lowlands of Judah, served as a buffer zone between the coastal plain on the shoreline of the Mediterranean and the hill country of Judah, further east in the highlands. Now, the Shephelah is characterized even still today by its foothills and valleys, and certainly during the 11th century, along the Elah Valley were cities such as Gath, where Goliath was from, Azekah, Sha'oraim, and Soko. The Philistines lived along the coastal plain and in the western part of the Shvela, while the Israelites controlled the eastern part of the lowlands and the high hill country. Now, who were the Philistines? Their name in Hebrew literally means invader. They settled along the Mediterranean coastline and in the western part of the Shvela, where they inhabited five primary cities in the region. Three of these major Philistine cities were located directly on the coast. This would be Gaza, Ashkelon, and Ashdod, while the cities of Ekron and Gath were further inland. These Aegean people from Kaphtor, which was most likely Crete, according to Amos chapter 9, verse 7, and Jeremiah chapter 47, verse 4, were a rising foe for the Israelites, especially around 1200 BC. The Egyptians knew them well, and like the Israelites, they too battled them. In fact, the Egyptian pharaoh, Ramses III, referred to the Philistines as the Sea Peoples, and on the walls of the 12th century BC Medinet Habu mortuary temple of Ramses III, the Sea Peoples were depicted as a defeated army. It's so interesting to see that the wall reliefs of this temple, located incidentally on the west bank of the Nile River in Luxor, displays still the Philistine soldiers wearing unique feathered helmets and short skirts, actually. They also carried small, rounded shields and swords. So thanks to the Egyptians, perhaps we get a good picture of what the Philistines look like, especially when they migrated to the shores of Israel. No doubt they brought their culture and their battle tactics with them. Now, they were an invading military force to be reckoned with as they traveled eastward up any of these east-west valleys of the Shvela in order to penetrate into the hill country where King Saul and the Israelites lived. Now, these well-established, fierce Philistines lived along Israel's coastline, and as they pushed eastward, they indeed intended to expand their own territory. However, the timid band of Israelites, fully aware that they were the underdogs, tried to stop them. Can you even picture this? Because essentially the confrontation offered by the Philistines was primarily over the control of the valley and the natural approaches up to the hill country. Now, Gath, Goliath's hometown, incidentally, I was able to help with the excavation a few years ago, which was exciting in itself. Now, this is really a story where the proximities between where the Philistines lived and where the Israelites were camped is a critical part of understanding this narrative. Gath, Goliath's hometown, was only about 6 miles west of Azekah, and only perhaps a mile or two more miles from the actual battlefield. In other words, the battlefield was just to the east of Azekah. Now, that's pretty close, and the Israelites knew that, of course, this posed a problem. No doubt because of the interest in Goliath, Gath had been excavated quite extensively. This ancient city, called Tel Asafi today, was the largest of the five primary Philistine cities. In fact, the size of the Tel, or the ancient mound, is close to 125 acres. The ruins date back even into the early Bronze period, well before even the Israelites conquer Canaan. Most of the excavation has taken place near the top of the site. However, In recent years, great time and effort in digging at the foot of the Tell has indeed uncovered impressive ruins here as well. This includes a Philistine altar made of one block of stone. It actually had two horns in contrast to the Israelite altar with four horns, one at each corner. Where I actually had the chance to dig and help with this excavation, we excavated and worked on exposing the impressive gate structure that has been found, perhaps the water gate for the city, since the spring of the city was just outside the gate. Of course, a large amount of Philistine pottery has been found there, and unlike Israelite pottery, Philistine ware was typically decorated and glazed, and it was very similar to Mycenaean pottery from Greece, which reflects the Aegean origins of the Philistines. So when we travel east from Gath along the Elah Valley, the large sites of Azekah and Sukkot, or Sukkot, are visible. Now, like Gath, Azekah was located on a high ridge, and standing on the top of this site, Azekah, the dominating Philistine city of Gath to the west, built on a high hill, can actually be clearly seen. And since 100 years ago, when Azekah was first excavated, the archaeologists have resumed, thankfully, the excavations here in recent years. What's interesting to me is that this site, apparently, at the time of the battle, was still unoccupied. Now, the site of Sukkot, or Sukkot, depending on how we pronounce it, is east of Azekah and located on a high ridge on the southern side of the Elah Valley. Now, climbing to the top of this large, unexcavated site offers a commanding view of one of two narrow sections of the eastern Elah Valley. Now, directly across from Sukkot on the north edge of the Elah Valley is yet another higher ridge. Perched on this ridge is a relatively recent archaeological site called Khirbet Kayafa. Now, this was either 11th or 10th century site that some identify as Sha'arayim, mentioned in verse 52 at the end of this 1 Samuel 17 narrative. The reason for identifying this as Sha'arayim, at least by some, is because of the two chambered gates that were uncovered here. And incidentally, the name Sha'arayim means, you guessed it, two gates. However, perhaps the nearby site of Khirbet Esh Sharia seems to better fit the geography of the end of the 1 Samuel 17 story. So when we talk about the first few verses of this particular passage, this is how the first three verses read. And it gives us some geographical markers to help us pinpoint the locations of the armies and, believe it or not, even the battlefield. Here's verse 1 through 3. Now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle, and they were gathered at Sukkot, which belongs to Judah, and encamped between Sukkot and Azekah in Ephes-Damim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and encamped in the valley of Elah, and drew up in line of battle against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on the one side, and the Israelites stood on the mountain on the other side with a valley between them. Now, the details of these three verses tell us two things. First of all, the location of the camps. Now, for certain, the Philistines camped on the southern ridge between Azekah and Sukkot. And the location of the Israelites' camp, however, is in question. The Israelites camped on either the northern ridge directly across the valley where Kibrut Hayafa is located today, or they were positioned on a ridge further east along the valley. But secondly, verse 3 may actually hint where the actual battlefield was located. While there were a few exceptions in the Hebrew Bible for this Hebrew word, pronounced Gai, G-A-I, but most often this Hebrew word refers to a narrow valley as opposed to a broad valley. For instance, the word emek conveys the meaning of a broad valley. The valley of Jezreel today up north is indeed a very wide valley, and it is actually called the emek. So there are really only two narrower parts of the Elah Valley where David could have engaged in battle with Goliath. And we've talked about one of these already between Soko and Kibrut Hayafa, but the other narrow section of the valley, or the Gai in Hebrew, is further east, where the valley actually bends towards the south. This would mean that the Israelite army did not camp on the Kibrut Hayafa Ridge, but rather on the last ridge that descends down into the eastern edge of the valley. But perhaps Hayafa and that location and that ridge on the north side of the valley should be identified as the camp for the Israelites. Now, for 40 days, as perhaps you know the story, this 9-foot-tall giant, according to the Hebrew Bible, he was 6 cubits in a span, although the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible, mentions he's only 4 cubits in a span, so he's either 9'9" or 6'9", still a pretty big guy. And this humiliating standoff lasted 40 days, according to verse 16 of chapter 17 of 1 Samuel. And why would that be? It's because no one in Saul's army was courageous enough to accept Goliath's challenge. This was, of course, until David entered the picture. Fresh from shepherding his father's flocks in Bethlehem, to the east, about 15 miles, high in the hill country of Judah, David was sent by his father to hand deliver grain and loaves of bread for his brothers. And upon arriving, David himself saw the threat, and it doesn't take long for him to rise to the occasion. Just imagine you were an Israelite soldier watching this final showdown from one of these high ridges, and you hear the clatter of the Philistine weaponry. War is in the air. You feel it. You smell it. You hear the taunt offered by Goliath for all of these consecutive days. And perhaps you are ready to run for the hill country if this giant, the obvious favorite, prevails. Tension fills the air, and yet David strides from the hill country down into the valley, and he chooses to engage the giant. So this is where we pick up this incredible narrative from 1 Samuel chapter 17. We pick it up in verse 40. This is now after David appears on the scene. And as we read, now he took his staff in his hand and chose 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in his shepherd's pouch. His sling was in his hand, and as he approached the Philistine moved forward and came near to David with his shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. And the Philistine said to David, Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head, and I will give the dead bodies of the hosts of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not by sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand." Now when the Philistines across the way and arose, coming now towards David to meet him, David, as we pick up the text, ran quickly towards the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone and slung it and struck the Philistine on his forehead. The stone sank into his forehead and he fell on his face to the ground. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him. There was no sword in the hand of David. So then when David ran and stood over the Philistine now, he took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel and Judah rose with a shout and pursued the Philistines as far as Gath and the gates of Ekron, so that the wounded Philistines fell on the way from Shaaraim as far as Gath and Ekron. And the people of Israel came back from chasing the Philistines, and they plundered their camp. Now, isn't this an incredible story, even though we only read some of the highlights from this 17th chapter? The obvious underdog went into battle not equipped with the latest weaponry, but with only a sling and five stones that he gathered from the dry riverbed. Now, with a leather sling, it is possible for projectiles to be thrown as fast as 100 miles an hour. The stone David used must have penetrated the giant's head right below his iron helmet. Now again, from the 12th century BC pylon relief displayed in Egypt at the specific mortuary temple at Medinet Habu, this temple of Ramses III that depicts the Sea Peoples, there seemingly was indeed a vulnerable part of the forehead left exposed with the Philistine style of helmet. But more importantly, David went into battle with no actual battlefield experience, yet he was courageous, and his confidence was in God. And David's battle cry was, "I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied." And against all odds, David defeated and killed the Philistine giant. David responded with confidence and courage. God intervened. Now, I love the very end of this exciting chapter, because Saul now asks Abner, the commander of his army, "Whose son is this young man?" And Abner replies, "I don't know." So Saul asked David himself, and while still holding the head of Goliath in his hand, picture this, by the way, David answers, "I am the son of your servant Jesse of Bethlehem." This is found in verses 55 through 58. You see, Saul and Abner didn't realize who David was, but God did. God knew David was a young man who completely trusted him. David's connection with God was built on trust and confidence in a God who intervened on behalf of those who trust in him. You see, size didn't matter. The only thing that did matter was the unwavering faith that David had in his mighty God. Our own connection with God begins as we ourselves recognize who he is. He is the sovereign and empowering God who knows our every step. He knows our fears. He knows our predicaments. David knew full well who God was. He trusted his life to him. You know, we all face certain battles of life, don't we? Some of these challenges can be as big as giants. Perhaps we even wonder if God can bring victory in the impossible circumstances that we face. And yet the choice is about whether to live a life of courage or not. Yet when we face these battles with the same strength and confidence that David displayed, God can bring us victory as well. It is a matter of trusting in him. Now, as we bring this to a close, I don't know what battle you are facing today. But our attitude when we face the battles of life, let's be honest, can be very telling. If our confidence is grounded upon God, then fear indeed can be set aside. Our greatest test and challenge has the potential to become our greatest testimony. But the truth of the matter is that God does bring victory to the underdog, yes, even us, when we place our faith and trust in him. Choosing to live a life of courage transforms us into being dynamic followers of Christ who are fit to fight the Lord's battles. This prayer, perhaps, is one that we can pray even today. Lord, give me the courage to face my battles today, as large or small as they may be. Strengthen my trust and confidence in you. Help me to live a life of courage today. Amen.
Thank you for joining us for this program. We hope it was enlightening and inspiring. If you have questions, you can email Dr. John DeLancey at drjohn@biblicalisraeltours.com. We invite you to visit our website, biblicalisraeltours.com, where we have resources about Israel and the Bible, select images from today's program, along with links to our YouTube channel featuring on-location teaching videos from the land of Israel. Additionally, our site also has information about upcoming trips throughout Israel and other biblical lands. A tour of the Holy Land will transform the way you read and understand the Bible, as it has for thousands of others. Until next time, thanks for listening, and Shalom.